All right. Well, folks, pleasure to be here with you today. Flew out from Virginia, and it was snowing pretty hard, and I'm starting on a four-day road trip. I'll be over to the University of Missouri tomorrow, and then I got to go up into the South Bend, Fort Wayne area, and then track back into Virginia. Let me further introduce myself. I'm Dave Cole from Virginia Tech. Been at Virginia Tech not 73, but 25 years. And I'm originally from upstate New York, grew up about 60 miles north of Syracuse, New York. And one of the things is Virginia Tech allowed me to do a significant amount of travel. I still am there. I guest lecture and also supervise students because if you stay around the university, it keeps you young. I do a significant amount of traveling. Last year, I traveled in 39 states, 5 Canadian provinces, and worked with the Chinese and the Australians. And one of the things I'll have to tell you right up front, the older I get, the more I travel, the less I know. If you really want to be humbled, try to go out there and try to make sense of the whole world economy. The other thing is I'm a fellow agricultural producer. I'm different. We have a livestock. We're a dairy farm. We have two of them, one of 100 cows and 130 cows. And we put in a processing plant about 11 years ago, and we bottle our milk in the old-fashioned glass bottle. We're selling about 50,000 gallons of milk a month to Kroger stores, Whole Food, and also Earth Fare. We're not organic. We're local and natural. We sell 41 flavors of ice cream, the premium stuff, about anywhere from 17 to 26% fat. You don't have to eat a lot, and you have to exercise a lot, and then it eventually kills you, but what a way to go, you know? And the other component is we broke a record this year. We sold 100,000 quarts of eggnog and custard. That broke a record for us. We also launched home delivery about 5 years ago. We have 1,250 customers. Who's our customer? Females with children in affordable homes. They buy about $25 a week. Half of it will be dairy-related product, but you know what they want? Locally grown vegetables, locally grown beef, locally grown eggs. Now, we don't have any chickens on our farm, so you know what we did? We commissioned a bunch of old hippies up in the Blue Ridge Mountains. Now, these folks did inhale, if you know what I'm talking about. And they provide us with the eggs and the chickens, and boy, people like it, and God only knows what's in it. But, you know, today, what I would really like to do is focus on the 50,000-100,000 foot and really try to get you thinking. And I just want to give you this thought. You know, you may not be interested in global macroeconomics, but it's interested in you. And one of the things that I would just suggest to you is you're going to have to think globally and then bring it down to your kitchen table, your iPad, or whatever you have, and execute it locally. And so what I'm going to do is talk a little bit about global economics and how it's impacting you, and if we can get the technology to work. One of the things that I would just suggest to you, here's a couple of trends I want you to be thinking about. Emerging trend number one, we are in a Swiss cheese economy throughout the world. You think about this. In the Midwest, in the upper Midwest, you're in the island of prosperity. Used to be farms were asset rich, cash flow poor. Today, you're asset rich and cash flow rich. And boy, if not properly used, that can be a cocktail that can get you into problems. And what we're finding is that industries like the agriculture industry that's aligned with the emerging nations called the BRICS, you're doing well. You've been on a 9-year run, unprecedented. And so other parts of the economy, other parts of the world, they're in the dungeons of doom. So what you have is a very unequal type of economy. Here's the other element that I'm noticing. I'm seeing more young people at the conferences I'm doing and I've ever seen. Now, everybody asks me, what's young? Anything under 70? Now, anything under 40 years of age. You know, I've never seen as many young people like John's son. They're boomerang kids. They're coming back. There's a lot of opportunity in agriculture. You know one thing I'm not seeing here today? You know who are some of the major decision makers on our farm businesses? And don't you ever forget it. It's Valentine's Day. It's women. Matter of fact, 63% of all credit decisions, 80% of all investment decisions are made or influenced by the female. And then, of course, in certain areas of the country, we're seeing some minorities. But you know what it's doing? It's bringing a whole new energy and a whole new thinking to agriculture. And that is exciting. You know what the other element is? Everybody asks me, is there a perfect business model? No, there's no such thing as one size fits all. There's going to be a place for this local, natural, organic, but I'm just going to tell you, if we try to feed the world with that model, we'll starve. Is there a place for the mid-sized farm? You're dead gone right. But you keep modest amounts of debt. One of the things is you'll find is you will keep focus on efficiency. Okay, better is better before bigger is better. You keep modest family living. And you know what a number of mid-sized farms will tell me? The best crop they'll ever raise will be their children. Don't you ever forget about that. And your pursuit of maximum. Remember, it's a pursuit of maximum, not only in your business, but your family as well. Is there going to be a place for this large, complex business? You did gone right. And one of the things is you're going to operate farm businesses, many enterprises, but non-farm businesses. But you know what's going to be important for that business? When a lender analyzes you for credit, they look at the five C's: cash flow, collateral, character. On this one, it's going to require the sixth C. You know what the sixth C is? It's called the cranium. Do you have the ability to come out and hear? Do you understand how it's impacting you, but can you take action? You know, a lot of people will come out to hear, fewer understand how it impacts them, but very few will take action. And so what I'm trying to say is, it's not going to be one size that fits all. Now, some of you that will listen to me this morning, you'll say, he was kind of gloom and doom. I'm just going to look you square in the eye, folks. There will be more opportunity in the next 10 years in agriculture than there has been in the past 30 or 40 years. But listen to this one. There's going to be more opportunity to fail. In other words, the stakes are higher, and what it's going to take is a high, motivated team to be able to do this. And you notice I said team? You know what? One of the things that we're seeing that really separates people out now, you pull together. Boy, that's the mother of all yawns. Holy smoly, it looked like Jaws was coming at me. How many donuts did you have this morning? Holy smoly. You should have seen that one there. I saw all of his dental work this morning. Holy smoly. I'm having fun with you. No, I'm not. Okay. I used to have students do the same thing to me. Alrighty. But one of the things that I would just suggest to you, having your team in place is going to be real critical. Now, I've got the 50-100-70 rule. Where did I pick this up? One of my former students, Cornell University, when I was there, sabbatic, his name's Jeff Simmons, president of Elanco Livestock. He wrote a paper last summer. It's a very good paper. Everybody needs to read it. You know what he basically says? Think of this. By the year 2050, we're going to need 100% more food, fiber, and fuel in the world, and 70% of it is going to come through what? Technology efficiency. Technology efficiency. Think about that and why you're at this conference here today. And you know what's going to happen to you? About 2014 and 2015, you're going to see the convergence. And remember this, convergence of three types of technologies: biotechnology, engineering technology, and information technology. I'll look you all square in the eye. If you got a younger generation that's thinking of coming back into your business, what is going to be the technology strategy, and do they have what it takes to cut it? Okay, that is going to be very, very critical. And one of the things that we're finding is it's not about biotechnology, it's not about engineering technology, it's not about information technology. It's putting the whole three of them together in a systematic process so you can just replicate, replicate, and replicate. That is going to be the key to maximizing your profits on your business. You know, a lot of people will say, agriculture, there's no profits. Well, if you look at the top 20% of producers on farm record systems, and there's about 50,000 that are on farm record systems, folks, this is not USDA stuff. Matter of fact, you know, John, it's interesting. When we start looking at those yields, I don't look at average anymore. You know why? Because if you plan on being average, you'll be out of business in 5 years. Top 20% since 1995, up and down cycles, their average rate of return on asset has been 10%. Can you name me any other industry that's legal that will get you a 10% return? Folks, it's there. But I've got to give you the other side. The other side is the bottom 20%, you know what their profit was? 1% and negative. And what you're going to find, folks, as we go out toward 2020, the better are going to get better, the worse are going to fall behind. And which group do you want to be in? It's going to be your choice, okay? Of course, agriculture will be five-dimensional: food, fiber, fuel, products for the life sciences, and products for the life experiences. But this thing of advisory teams, okay, going to be very, very critical. In other words, you've got to pull together your advisory team, and that could be all the way from your crop consultant. It could be all the way, if I'm speaking to livestock folks, it's livestock consultant, your lender, et cetera, et cetera. But you know what the key is going to be? Use them and do something about it. So again, these are some of the trends that are emerging that gives us opportunity. Now, let's kind of hit this one. Folks, I'm going to give you a dose of reality. Your moms and dads and your grandpas and grandmas had to manage volatility. But you know what you're going to have to manage? Volatility at the extremes. And you got to remember, volatility creates opportunity if you're positioned for it. If you aren't, it'll take you out. Now, there's going to be these things called black swans, unusual events that are going to come along. So when you're thinking about paying X amount of dollars per acre for land or cash rent for land, remember, black swans, unusual events, or what they call tail risk, are very prevalent, and it creates opportunity. You know what black swan number one is? Oil, black gold. Folks, just tell you this. We will have $200 a barrel oil, $6 diesel fuel and gasoline if they shut down the Straits of Hormuz, where 20% of world oil production comes through. While it only be temporary, okay, it will shoot us up there. And one of the things that I would just suggest to you is, how do you overcome that? You do scenario planning. Both on our dairies this year and also in our creamery, we did 10 different scenarios. We did this scenario. We only put a 10 to 15% probability on it. But you know what we have in our business plan? These are going to be the strategies if this occurs. Okay? And I'm telling you why we're going to have volatility, because 80% of your expenses are somehow connected to oil. Okay? And one of the things is the world has no energy type of policy. So that is going to be very, very critical. Of course, Euro. You all hear about the Euro sector. Today, Britain, France are downgraded by Moody's, and you say, well, that's all way over there. Remember, macroeconomics is interested in you. You know who one of your biggest customers is? China, particularly on the soybean side. You know who China's biggest trading partner is? Europe. So if Europe slows down, China slows down, and that slows down your agriculture. And so when you start thinking about, remember I said convergence is going to be important. You know what the other aspect that's going to be important? The interconnectedness and just understanding this whole interconnectedness. Of course, you say the same thing, it's going to happen in Europe, it's going to have to eventually happen to here. But you know what? Our politicians are kicking the can forward. No, they aren't. It's a snowball getting bigger as it comes downhill. You know what the other element is? It's called political uncertainty. Do you realize that 50% of the world's GDP is going to have a major election this year? By the way, the Chinese have already selected their guy. He's in Washington, D.C. Do you realize he has an agricultural background? He worked with pig farms on methane. You know where he's going on this trip? To Muscatine, Iowa. To go back to his roots. He's a common person. Okay? By the way, he's already been selected over there. If you disagree, you end up being a permanent fixture in the Great Wall. All right? Also, we've got major elections in Russia, here in the United States, in Venezuela. All these impact our strategies on taxes, regulations, and the whole thing. But you know what a lot of people will do? Just lock up and not do anything? What you've got to do is proceed forward. Proceed forward with these black swans. But you know what you do is you build in your safety nets in your business, okay? And you also position your business to capitalize on opportunities when these things occur, all righty? And so, again, these are some of the black swans, and a lot of people say, can't manage black swans. Oh, I disagree. What you do is you do this scenario planning, and you put some probabilities on it. Now, why has agriculture been doing well? Folks, I'm just going to tell you, it's not about the U.S. economy, it's about the global economy. And it's called the BRICS. Brazil, Russia, India, China, And last year they added South Africa. Those countries represent 20% of the world's GDP, but since the year 2000, they've represented one half of the world's economic growth. And you know what they're demanding? Food, fiber, and fuel. What do you all produce? Food, fiber, and fuel to a world growing population. Now, you know what's real interesting? When you look at the world population, remember this, 43% live on less than $2 a day. 800 million people out of China live on less than $2 a day, despite the Chinese economy growing from 1,050 household income to 6,500 in the past 12 years. You wonder why you're doing well? It's all onto these bricks. Now, folks, you know, you go through the airports, you have to carry your little bag, 311 now, right? Matter of fact, in Atlanta now, I'm on one of these lists now where I don't even have to take anything out of the bags. I just walk through and the whole thing. There's 336,000 of us, okay? And it's going to go to about 50 airports by the end of April. I go through St. Louis. I got to go through the porn scan, you know, where some geeky guy is going to be watching you up there, okay? But you have your little bag called 311, right? Well, think about this. Herman Cain had 999, but Herman's trying to find his wife again, all right? But I have the 853 rule. You know, it's very simple. Let's bring this global economics right down to make sense to you all. If you see these BRIC nations growing at 8% or greater, you know what it means? There's going to be demand for food, fiber, and fuel. You guys are going to be doing well, everything else being equal. If they happen to go to a 5% growth rate, it will take 20% right off commodities. Corn, beans, wheat, but it's going to take 20% off oil, steel, and copper as well. But the problem is the price comes down faster than the input cost. And you know what one of the dangerous input costs is today? A fixed cost called cash, rent, and farmland. And you can't make a quick adjustment there. And so what do? You make sure you have your parachute in order. And then if these countries go to a 3% growth rate, that's where you'll see the collapse of commodities. I got to be very, very candid with you. In other words, that's where you see the corn in the 250, the 3 again. It's very, very simple, folks. Watch the growth of those BRIC nations. And how come they've been growing? Because the printing presses are on around the world. And they basically, the money is in the emerging nations. Now, here's one thing I'm going to tell you, and it's going to come out there in the year 2020. China, in particular, has been making major investment in the southern hemisphere of the world, South America, Africa, Australia, and New Zealand. You know what their whole goal is to have another source of food, fiber, and fuel other than North America and Europe. Look me square in the eye. They don't want to replace us. But in China, it's all about negotiations. When we deal with the Chinese, what do? We send politicians. They send business people. Who's going to win that one? And one of the things that I will tell you is, as you go toward 2015, 2020, you're going to have intensified competition coming out of the southern hemisphere of the world. So that is why your technology strategy, putting your teams together, is going to be very, very critical in developing and maintaining a sustainable business model. You know what the other element that's very important is? Think about China. She was the seventh largest economy in the world in the year 2000. Today, she's the second largest economy in the world. Brazil, 14-6. Listen to this. Economists like myself said China would exceed the U.S. economy by 2072 in the year 2000. That's what we were saying. By 2007, we said it was going to be 2032. Now you know what they're saying? 2019. But some of them are saying 2016. She's going to be bigger than the United States of America. Folks, that's what we're dealing with. Now, here is something I'm going to throw some cold water on you. Okay? You ever watch a championship football team? You ever watch a championship basketball team? One of the things is they have to go through a period of adversity. For example, you watch the Green Bay Packers this year, they got too hot too fast. New York Giants got hot at the right time. Every championship team or championship business has to go through adversity. And two things will happen. You'll go through the adversity and it blows up, the team blows up, or you know what you do? You rally around each other and you get better. Now, look me square in the eye. Your biggest customer globally, the BRIC nations, has yet to go through its period of adversity. Now, who's going through their adversity right now? Europe. Oh, everything was fine and dandy in Europe until all of a sudden they started having financial problems. The Germans got sick of bailing out the Greeks who retire at 30 years of age. What do you say? Folks, these BRIC nations have not gone through their period of adversity. What could be their period of adversity? It could be political. Do you realize in China last year they had 180,000 social unrest incidences? We don't hear much about it. Again, it's kind of suppressed. Or it could be military, indirectly. What happens if something happens in Iran? Or that guy up in North Korea, 28 years old, taking over the country. You know what he likes? NBA basketball. Get this, all right? But one of the things is, any adversity there, China's going to have to take a stand. And I'll tell you one thing that you better plan for. You better plan for, all of a sudden, some trade sanctions pop up. What are you going to do about it? Okay? Because, folks, macroeconomics is interested in you. And global macroeconomics is interested in you. And one of the things is, the people that plan and plan for those type of occurrences are going to be able to capitalize on opportunity. The other ones will be taken right out. Very, very quickly. And I'm being very, very candid with you, being kind of tough-minded. So, the emerging nations is one of the reasons why we've been in this super cycle that I've been talking about. Now, on the other side, let's look at the developed countries of the world. That being Canada, United States, and Mexico. Did a webcast all across Canada yesterday. Said the same thing. You take Europe and you take Japan. Pretend the globe's a farm. Those three areas, those three fields on the globe, North America, Europe, and Japan, those three fields generate 2/3 of the world economy with 1 in 6 people in the world. Now, it's interesting. Everybody puts the United States of America down. Folks, we produce more in 1 hour than 25% of the world countries produce in a year. We produce more in 28 days than China does in the whole year. Now, those three areas have three major problems. Public debt is high. Aging population, but you know where we really see the aging population? Your biggest customer, China, because of the one-child policy. They have 122 males for every 100 females. U.S. military gets kind of excited once that ratio goes beyond 111. You know why? Because males are aggressive and they tend to build up their military might. What's China doing right now? We don't hear much about it in the press. They're building up their military might. And you know what the other thing it's dragging on our economies is? Our entitlements. Folks, you go back to 1960, or you go back and entitlements were created prior to World War II and after World War II. They were great. But you know what's happening? We're outliving our entitlements. Go back to 1960. Okay, go back, say, 1964, World Series. Notice you got your St. Louis Cardinal. As a matter of fact, you know where I was the other day? Fargo, North Dakota. And you know what I did? I went out and visited Roger Maris's grave. And matter of fact, I followed Roger Maris. I was a Yankees fan, but I didn't follow Mickey Mantle. I followed Roger Maris. All of us liked him. And you know what I found out there in the snow? There was about 10 baseballs and different things, and actually had his final box score when he hit the 61st home run. But you know, I picked up one of the baseballs, and you know what it said? I miss you, Grandpa. That tells you a little bit about it. But you go back to that era, 1964, average citizen was living to be, if you made it to 65, you had about 8 more years. Today, it's 18 to 25 years. We're living 4 times longer in our retirement years. Folks, you know what we're going to have to do to turn this baby around? Cut entitlements. We're going to probably have to simplify a tax code, and we're probably going to have some tax adjustments. Those things are very, very critical. And again, we keep kicking the can forward, but you know what it says? Basically, the U.S. economy and the European economy are going to grow at a 1 to 2% or about 50% of what they normally should be growing at. Basically, because of all these things that have been built up. Now, let's talk a little bit about agriculture and talk about the super cycle, okay? I take my young man that had the big yawn there and did pretty well. And you think about it. He has never seen a downtime. He hasn't. You know why? Because he's been living in a super cycle. And what's a super cycle? Since 1910, there's been four super cycles. And what's a super cycle? It's when the markets line up, the weather lines up, and you make tons of money. You know how long a typical super cycle has lasted? 2.8 to 3.4 years. You know how long this one's lasted? 9 years. 9 years. When the ball went down on Times Square, December 31st, and Dick Clark was there, boy, he looked bad. All right, he did. Dick needs something. But you know even who Dick Clark is, do you? Huh? Yeah, there you go. Yeah, he does. All right, poor guy. But this super cycle has lasted three times longer than any super cycle we've had. So you know what we'll hear? It's a new normal. We're on a new plateau, folks. Everything's a cycle. And there's been five significant events that's created the best of the best times. Number one is the growth of the export markets. Number two has been ethanol. Okay? And I'm just going to have to tell you, on the ethanol, if I speak to Chamber of Commerce groups and Rotary Club groups in urban areas, ethanol, oh my God, they glare at me. I spoke to a local co-op back in October. And they asked me to come over and speak. And it was my wife and I's anniversary, so I got a free meal out of that. And the problem is she won the door prize. She won a knife, and it was a Crocodile Dundee knife. Do you know who Crocodile Dundee? Yeah, okay, all right, okay, all right. Now, one of the things, poor guy, aren't you glad you yawned there? Okay. Now, one of the things that's real interesting is, I'd mentioned ethanol, all of a sudden a beef producer just got right. That's the reason we're going out of business. That's why we don't have any profits. Oh, you got all violent and all that. He says, why don't we import it from Brazil? I go to him, sir, we're actually exporting the stuff now. He says, well, it's sugar-based. I go, that's right. And you know what else I told him? I said, the demand for sugar is up in the world. And you know what's interesting? China. Think about feeding the world here. China and India just surpassed the United States of America per capita sugar use. So, I'm down in Texas speaking to the cotton growers last winter. You know where everybody's Jim Bob, Billy Bob, and all the Bobs were there, all right? And Jim Bob comes up during the break. He says, Doc, you provoked a thought. And I says, what thought did it provoke? He says, I'm taking all my ground out of corn and putting it over in cotton. I says, well, what's the premise behind that major decision? He says, well, you know, if all those folks from China and India start eating more sugar, says their waistline's going to expand. And he says they're going to need another set of jeans. And, of course, cotton's in jeans. And he says there's 3 billion of those buggers. That's the way he said it. Now, as much as I'm mocking Jim Bob and Billy Bob or whoever he was, Joe Bob, you know, he gets it. You're all interconnected, and you've got one commodity impacts the other commodity. And that has been a game changer. Folks, this is interesting. What's Ben Bernanke and Alan Greenspan done? In the past 9 years, they've kept a low value of the dollar. What? To try to expand this economy through exports. That's been a critical game player. Macroeconomics is interested in you. You know what the other theme is? We've been in a low period of interest rates. Folks, everybody says, will we see a spike in interest rates? You know what a spike in interest rates would be? Back to normal. If we go back to normal, that's a spike in interest rates in today's terms. And then you know what the final thing is? It's been the weather. And again, I'm not global warming. I am basically saying when weather events come over major production areas, and by the way, in the United States there's about 25, Canada there's 6, in the world there's about 115 to 140 major production areas. Have a major weather event hit one of those areas, you knock supply off. And with all the hot money in the world, they start playing the markets. All five of those have come together. I'm going to look you square in the eye, though, and basically say this. Livestock has been suffering up till just recently. You need a strong livestock industry to have a strong grain industry. Never forget that one, okay? Because that is your baseline. So this 9-year super cycle has really all come together. And again, something would have to happen in these convergence of events to basically say the super cycle won't continue 10, 11, and 12 years. Now, let's talk about this slide right here.
Folks, last spring, something came around the Federal Reserve that almost impacted every one of you sitting in this room. You know what it was? Some people inside the Federal Reserve said that there was a credit bubble in agriculture. Oh, yeah. There was a credit bubble just like the 1980s. So all of a sudden, phones started ringing. Dr. Danny Kleinfelder's, Dr. Mike Bulge's. And the Federal Reserve says, is this accurate? Matter of fact, we were invited to dinner with the Federal Reserve presidents. And when you go to dinner with the Federal Reserve presidents, they check your background. I was lucky to get in. But you know what else they'll check? They'll have two big Marines standing at the door. And boy, they will scowl. And you know what the first question that they ask when those doors close? Is United States agriculture in a credit bubble? And you know what I said? No. I think it disappointed them. You know why? They said, well, Dr. Cole, and when they say Dr. Cole, you know it's going to be Roto-Rooter. Do you have data to back that up? Basically, it's this. You go and look at total farm debt and divide net farm income. You know what the ratio is? 2.26 to 1. When it's under 5 to 1, there's no credit bubble. Matter of fact, you know what it was in the 1980s? 14 to 1. I remember working with Dr. Tom Fry, University of Illinois, and some of you know him, okay? And matter of fact, we did a number of seminars. Those ratios were 14 to 1. Certain areas, it was 18, 20 to 1. We had too much debt for the net income to service it. So we are not in a credit bubble, but we're in an asset bubble. And what's the difference? An asset bubble is where everybody puts their profits and their equity into it. Used to be, we've got, you know, we used to put 20% down, finance the other 80%. Now it's 80% down, finance the other 25%. And what happens is an asset bubble is like air coming out of a balloon. When it occurs slower, but it's actually more painful because you lose your equity if we were to have a major correction. And I will come back and talk about this, but we are definitely in an asset bubble, not a credit bubble. Let me go back to this slide here. I picked on the young producers in here. I've got a young man from West Tennessee. I go down there and speak. Past 3 years, he's made almost seven-figure net income. Seven-figure. He's buying one or two farms a year. And you know what I told him about 2 years ago? I says, one of the things you better do is start building your working capital position. Okay? And he's taken heed to it, and I hope he's not too late. Because one of the things that I would just suggest to all my younger producers in here, you better have a strong working capital position, because if the cycle changes, even short, working capital is going to be very critical. Here's the other thing. We're making too many decisions off tax returns rather than accrual adjusted returns when there's a 64% difference of what you report to the government to accrual adjusted. And we're making 5, 10, 15, 20-year decisions. And that is a train wreck waiting to happen. Very few businesses ever go broke paying income tax. Many of them will go broke trying to minimize income tax. There's a nice balance in between. Okay? Now let's go to the third bullet. I got to tell you a little story. Okay? Let's go to Chicago. I was up there last winter, and guess what? Yours truly has experienced two of the three largest snowstorms in Chicago's history. You know what the first one was? You know where I experienced them? Gate B-22, United Airlines. If you ever go there, 1999, I spent 39 hours in B-22. Oh, you can watch it snow all night through the windows. And I experienced it with a bunch of University of Tennessee fans that just won the National Football Championship. And I got so sick of hearing good old Rocky Top. I got your Rocky Top, okay? All night long, all day long. Well, this last year, I was in B-22 again. Spent 27 hours there. Because I met a commitment in downtown Chicago. 1,000 people. And I had to speak on this economic stuff, okay, right after lunch. And you know what they did? Kiss of death for a speaker. They fed them pasta for lunch. So when you feed a group pasta or they eat a bunch of donuts, about an hour later, they're either yawning like my young man here or they're out, man down, man down, man down, okay? Second thing is, they put a motivational speaker on at lunch. This guy was an astronaut. And I go, oh, my God. And this was this guy had flown 3 space shuttle missions, and I have these boring old PowerPoints he had, what it was like to be on the space shuttle, things flying around and all that type of stuff, and I'm sitting in the back of the room sweating off about 15 pounds. And you know what else? It was the 25th anniversary of the Challenger disaster where we lost a school teacher and the astronauts. And then you know what? He got the audience really going when he said he was supposed to be on the Challenger. And I'm going, oh my God. And then all of a sudden I resonated with him because he said something that connects with agriculture. Folks, let's talk about the space shuttle and how does it relate to you all. You know, it's real interesting. The real problem with the space shuttle was a little O-ring, you know, that we'll have on tractors and combines. And you know what? The frontline engineers warned them that this was going to be a problem. But NASA was under pressure. In other words, we've got to get one of these things launched. Do you ever get under pressure? We don't buy that land. We won't see it for 25 years. And you know what else? They were getting political pressure as well. So you know what they did? They went ahead and launched it. And guess what? It went up and came back. And they launched 25 of them. And the more they launched them, the more complacent they became. And then, you know what happened? A frontline engineer out of school said, well, we still have the O-ring problem, but what happens if we have a convergence of events? An Alberta clipper out of Canada comes all the way to Florida, has cold weather, cracks the O-ring. And you know what he basically said? You're going to have a predictable surprise, folks, and it is going to be ugly. He sent that memo in August. In January, it occurred. And after it occurred, you know what they basically came up with? NASA's concept. It's called the normalization of deviation. When you start normalizing deviation, you're going to get a predictable surprise and it's going to be ugly. And you know what's interesting? The astronauts actually lived through the explosion. Matter of fact, they were moving the toggle switches all the way to the ocean. And if they'd had a parachute on the space shuttle, 70% probability they may have lived. So what did NASA do on missions after that? They put a parachute. What I'm trying to say is, we have deviation type of times right now. What is going to be your strategy? What's going to be your parachute, not only financial-wise, but management-wise? Don't get into the trap of normalizing deviation. Be very, very cautious as you move on. Now, let's move on. And let's talk about a couple of other things and talk a little bit about the global economy. And U.S. economy right now, she is growing at about a 2.8% growth rate. She's in the yellow zone. Europe is growing 0.4 with a 50% probability going into recession. We'll put them in the yellow zone. But you know one of the things I'm just going to tell you? Who's China's biggest customer? Europe, trading partner. Japan's in a recession. They're in the red zone. But the BRIC nations are growing at 8.1%. And remember, if the BRICs grow above 8%, commodity prices are going to do well. Now, let's move on and talk a little bit about land and land value correction. Folks, if we were to see this asset bubble change, what would cause it? Global economic downturn, it's going to hit your renting growth-oriented farms that plow all their profits in their business without leaving some liquidity behind. And you know what else is going to happen? It's going to be more regional and local this time. It will not be nationwide. Matter of fact, I go to the state of Washington where I was there last week. They have no land bubble. Go to Western New York, there's no land bubble. It's centered right in this area, and it'll be large blocks of land that will come on to the marketplace. But we've had a good 20 couple of year run on land, and so as I kind of size up agriculture, I think the slowdown of the BRICS trade disputes, remember, the BRICS are your marketplace. Politics is trade disputes, and here's the one that kind of concerns me. We have a lot of built-in cost structures that are heavy on the fixed cost side because of land rents and farmland values. And so in managing your margins, those things are very critical. Now, I've talked about the U.S. economy. Let me come to this final equation as I shut it down because this says it all. P equals O plus C plus L plus M squared. That sounds like an economist, doesn't it? But let's make it very, very simple. You know what P is? Profit. And folks, one of the things is, it's the profitable years that get you into problems. It's not the bad years. And every one of you need to have a profit plan. And you know what I have called the 60-30-10 rule. And you know what the 60-30-10 rule is? Very interestingly, 60% of your profits should be first to build in efficiencies, get better before you get bigger, incrementally grow, and get your balance sheet in order when you have the profitable times. That's the 60%. The 30% is build a working capital reserve. At least 33% of your revenues need to be in working capital, things that are cash or could be turned to cash. And then what's the 10% rule? Do what you want to do in life, okay? But where the problem is when the 10% becomes the 50%. For example, up in Iowa, it's the lake houses. Everybody's buying those. Nebraska, it's the travel trailers to go to the Big Ten games. They didn't do so well this year, right? You know what I saw on a balance sheet of one producer? A banker showed me. He didn't have one. He had two helicopters. Took Section 179. Listen to this. You know what his justification was? To go out and check the livestock. But the problem is the livestock was in a confinement system. Okay? Go figure. All right? What I'm trying to say is the proper use of profits is so critical. And don't get caught into the undisciplined pursuit of more. It'll burn you every daggone time. You know what the other part of the P is? People. Folks, somebody asked me up in Spokane last week, what's one thing that is going to be important in agriculture today and in the future that hasn't been in the past 30 years? You know what I said? People. Used to be your moms and dads and grandpas and grandmas were independent and they didn't have to deal with people. You're going to be interdependent, and you're going to have to deal with people. And I've got the 40-20-40 rule as far as people. 40% of people you don't want around you. They feel like the world owes them a living. They feel like they're entitled. They're going to drag you down financially. They'll drag you down mentally, and sometimes they're going to be family members. You're going to have to shed them. 20% will be marginal, but that other 40%, you want them. They show up to work on time. They follow directions. They get along with people. But what do? They do what they say they're going to do. And folks, those are the people you want on your team internally in your business, but also your team of advisors. Folks, agriculture is a very isolated business today, and it's very, very critical that you have that team together, okay? Because that's how you're going to feed the world and maximize and optimize not only your yields but your profits, but your lifestyle as well. You know what always in the equation? Your weak link right now, overhead cost. With the cash rents going up and the land values going up right now, this one is throwing us out of global competitiveness, particularly if the cycle should change. And I'm a little bit concerned about that. You know what C is? Knowing your cost of production, knowing it via enterprise. So you can allocate your profits where you get your biggest bang for your buck. In our creamery, we do that. We've got eggnog, ice cream, milk, etc. You know what our most profitable margin is? It's a dumb idea that was submitted 2 years ago by one of our employees. And we said it was a dumb idea. It was selling lemonade in a glass. $275,000 worth last year. 69% margin. It's not going to carry the business, but boy, I'll tell you what. It's a nice profit enhancer. It's got my man kind of thinking about that one there. But one of the things is knowing your cost of production. L in the equation is basically working capital, liquidity. Liquidity gives you that flexibility in your business. And you know what? A lot of people say, put money in the bank, you did gone right. No return on interest, you did gone right. Because you know what you're doing? Read the book Great by Choice by Jim Collins. He looks at companies that are 10 times more profitable than other companies. You know what they do? They keep cash on hand. Why are corporations in America have 6.8% of their assets right now in cash when it's normally about 2 to 3%? They're positioning for the next opportunity. And one of the things is cash gives you the choices. And we're too short-run thinking, okay? And you know what the final element is? M squared. It's marketing and management, which is equal to margin. Remember, it's all about you're in a margin business. And one thing I'm just going to tell you is success in management is not doing one thing 1,000% better. It's doing 1,000 little things 1% better. So Let me close it right down. Think about this. You may not be interested in global macroeconomics. She's interested in you. One of the things that I would suggest to you, there's going to be a lot of opportunity, but it's going to take some big time type of management. And number three, following that equation right there, it will not guarantee success, but you will have a high probability of success regardless of the cycle. So folks, there she is. There's a lot of opportunity. And again, think globally, act locally. And thank you very much for having me on the program this morning. And appreciate you all coming out here. It looks like we're getting a room filled up. And thanks again. Appreciate it.